Part 2. Chapter 8. Chance and Necessity. This story has been told in the bazaars of Iraq for centuries, and is really very sad, therefore do not laugh. Abdul Hassan was a famous maker of carpets in the reign of the great caliph, who much admired his craftsmanship. But one day, as he was presenting his wares at the court, a frightful catastrophe occurred. When Abdul bowed low before Harun al-Rashid, he broke wind. That night, the carpet maker closed his shop, piled his most precious wares upon a single camel, and left Baghdad. For years he wandered, changing his name but not his profession, over the lands of Syria, Persia, and Iraq. He prospered, but always he yearned for the beloved city of his birth. He was an old man when at last he felt sure that everyone had forgotten his disgrace, and it was safe to turn homeward again. The night was falling when the minarets of Baghdad came in sight, so he decided to rest at a convenient hostel before entering the city in the morning. The innkeeper was talkative and friendly, so Abdul was delighted to ply him for news of all that had occurred during his long absence. They were both laughing over one of the court scandals when Abdul asked casually, "When did that happen?" The innkeeper paused in thought, then scratched his head. "I'm not sure of the date," he said, "but it was about 5 years after Abdul Hassan farted." So the carpet maker never did return to Baghdad. The most trifling events can, in a mere moment of time, totally change the course of a man's life. And often it's not possible, even at the end, to decide whether the change was for better or worse. Who knows? Abdul's involuntary performance might well have saved his life. Had he remained in Baghdad, he could have become the victim of an assassin, or, far worse, have incurred the disfavor of the caliph and, consequently, the skilled services of his executioners. When 25-year-old cadet Robert Singh had started his final semester at the Aristarchus Institute of Space Technology, usually known as ARITECH, he would have laughed if anyone had suggested that he would soon become an Olympics competitor. Like all moon residents who wished to keep the option of returning to Earth, he had religiously carried out his high-G exercises in the ARITECH centrifuge. Though they were boring, the time was not completely wasted, as he spent most of it plugged into his study programs. Then, one day, the Dean of Engineering summoned him into his office, a sufficiently unusual event to alarm any final student. But he appeared to be in a good mood, so Singh relaxed. "Mr. Singh, your academic record is satisfactory, though not brilliant. But I don't want to talk to you about that. You may not be aware of the fact, but according to the medical readouts, you have an unusually good mass-energy ratio. So we'd like you to go into training for the upcoming Olympics." Singh was startled and not particularly pleased. His first reaction was, "How will I ever find the time?" But almost at once a second thought flashed through his mind. Any deficiencies in his academic record might well be overlooked if there were compensating athletic achievements. There was a long and honorable tradition to this effect. "Thank you, sir. I'm very flattered. I suppose I'll have to move to the Astrodome." The 3-kilometer-wide roof over a crater near the eastern wall of Plato enclosed the largest single airspace on the moon, and had become a popular venue for human-powered flight. There had been talk for some years of making this an Olympics event, but the IOC had not been able to decide whether contestants should use wings or props. Singh would be happy with either. He had tried both briefly on a visit to the Astrodome complex. He was due for another surprise. "You won't be flying, Mr. Singh. You'll be running on the open moonscape, probably across the Sinus Iridum.